Welcome to the Ghoulcast. This is Chris, and across me from me is
Glenn and Chris.
So, welcome to the Ghoulcast. This is our occasional creepy podcast from the Flint Horror Collective Ghoul Crew. We talk about scary business and movies and music and comics and everything kind of weird. And we usually have more than two, but this time it's just both of us.
Just the two.
Nice candlelit podcast.
It's just the two of us.
We had just been talking about something, and I thought it would be fun to kind of throw it in the mix. The idea of, see, with me, we were talking about movies that you were giving a second chance, and for me, the availability of streaming stuff, like we have Hulu and Prime and Netflix.
Right.
And then there's a bunch of stuff on YouTube I've taken advantage of. But the availability of stuff so immediately, I watch a lot of trash.
Yeah.
Happily, I turn around, like I was trying to say, like, I watch a lot of, like, found footage stuff, and, like, below Poverty Row, where it's, like, I give it a minute, like, to kind of, and I'm very forgiving with found footage.
Sure.
Because
it's one of those subgenres that you really like.
Oh, for sure. And it's one of those that you don't need a lot of special effects. Like, I watched one the other day, and I told Paul about, called Butterfly Kisses.
Okay.
Super well done.
Sorry. No, I'm imagining what this movie's about already.
No, it's stupid. And my only guess is that they wanted to call it Peeping Tom or Mr. Blink.
Okay.
And then probably those names are already taken. So it's about. So this guy finds. Like, he finds a box of videotapes in his in-law's house.
Okay.
And he decides he's going to do a documentary about that footage. And the footage is of a young film student shooting a documentary about a local legend called Peeping Tom / Mr. Blink.
Okay.
And so the movie is that girl's footage intercut with this guy's footage, and then at a certain point in the movie, it turns, and so you get a third layer of the film crew following him, making his documentary start documenting him, because they start kind of questioning whether or not he's faking everything.
Okay.
Like, initial footage and everything. Super well done, really interesting, like, I mean, there's moments that are kind of like, meh, but, like, it's really, it, like, the core of it really worked, and it was something I hadn't seen in a found footage, like, movie.
Okay.
Which really, I appreciate. But, so yeah, I mean, like I said, I watch a lot of trash, but you said you were rewatching movies that you were giving a second chance to.
Yeah. And you know, again, you know, with that, it's the idea of, you weren't sure about the first one you watched it, but generally I'm watching the ones that had a buzz from other people, right? So you go, I didn't really feel that, but a lot of people liked it. Let me give it a second chance to see. If I didn't like it and everybody else didn't like it, why am I going to give it a second chance anyway?
Yeah.
Clearly, that wasn't really a great movie, but the two that I've done recently was Black Swan, and kind of that was also based on the fact that I just gotten that Giallo documentary called All the Colors of Giallo.
Okay, yeah.
And then Nightcrawler, which, like me and you were just saying, is a drama but plays like a horror film when you really strip away what's going on in it. Not much different than, weirdly enough, you just mentioned
Maniac?
Peeping Tom.
Oh, Peeping Tom.
So I was thinking about the original Peeping Tom, which kind of reminds you a little bit of Nightcrawler in a way, too, where the characters are more comfortable behind the camera.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough.
Oh, it's that kind of thing is, at least kind of slasher mentality, is the reason there are masks. Because it's depersonalization. It's not you doing the things or allowing things to happen. It's someone else, so you're kind of like one step kind of removed from it.
Right. And in the subgenre that you were just talking about, the whole found footage, you know, a lot of that is the person behind the camera. So you're now the person behind the camera because the camera's moving around and you're watching what the character is watching.
Yep.
I guess in that documentary, All the Colors of Giallo, they talked about how Argento really pushed that genre and did some things that nobody had ever thought of before. And one of them was sometimes shooting from the killer's perspective.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess I never noticed that none of the others had done that until him.
You get it in Peeping Tom.
Right.
And Psycho, but not Zella.
They hadn't gone that in that direction at all. Not one.
I think it was.
I mean, and I went, oh, that's kind of smart.
Yeah.
But you're right. He might have watched Peeping Tom.
Yeah. Or again, like Psycho.
The Italians were really good at watching those type of movies, Psycho and Peeping Tom and stuff. And
well, and I mean, especially when you talk about the European film, and it was the blacklist of the guy.
Yeah.
So I mean, that might have been one of those movies that would have been an art house movie and came out and feared, and I mean, and it has a giallo feel. So
yeah, it definitely does.
So yeah, absolutely. And you know, he did things differently than classic giallos. After the first two, the first two were kind of by the numbers, but like closer to the numbers, and then he kind of started to get a little weirder.
Weirder and cooler and stuff.
Better, kind of better camera work and more interesting palettes and absolutely. Well, it's funny too because you're right. There's like Jordan Peele has made clear that he doesn't feel that. Get Out is a horror film. He feels like psychological thriller because he kind of goes that Us is a horror film. I mean, whatever, he's the director, he can say whatever he wants, as far as his movie, but again, like, if it's a thriller, it's a horror thriller.
Yeah, yeah.
It
doesn't have to have something supernatural to be horror.
Yeah.
But for him, that's where his line of demarcation is the fact that there's nothing supernatural, I guess, in Get Out, I suppose, but it sort of is.
I think it's too limiting to say that The Hitcher is a horror film. There's nothing supernatural at all.
No, absolutely not.
His drive to kill is because comes near supernatural. It's beyond what a human would generally go through.
Right.
I don't know that it's. I don't know. It's very.
I mean, most slasher films would be considered not a horror when you think about it.
Friday the 13th doesn't get supernatural until Part 6.
Right. And think about by Jordan Peele's definition, Texas Chainsaw is not a horror film.
Yeah.
And you're like, come on, that's a horror. That is straight up horror film.
Yeah, I think it's the prevailing mood.
Yeah.
Like I watched.
I like to spread the biggest net possible. So, there are lots of thrillers that I think are horror films. Psycho, a lot of those.
I think we need to not, you should only label movies one thing or the other, like at a movie store, at a library, where you have to have something. You can't have it everywhere.
To narrow the person looking for its field of vision.
Yeah.
You can find it.
Yeah, because it's kind of like, yes, the other classic rock, but they're also like experimental rock. They're British rock. They're they're a million things. But Seventh Land, it's a thriller, but it's horrific.
Yeah,
and so it
drives it like a drama.
Yeah, absolutely. She her acting is like a drama.
Yeah, yeah.
Like his is
almost like a drama too when you think about it.
Almost
Shakespearean,
but it's almost kind of thrillery. Like his is, but hers is straight like. Trying to do my accent, and I got the crying lambs, it's Dracula's all police procedural with kind of weird stuff, which is funny because then you get the other one, Ridley Scott's Hannibal as a horror, like that, he directed it as a horror film, but it's a horror film that wants to be it's a drama that is a horror film almost,
right?
Because it's kind of generally dry, like tongue-in-cheek, I guess, there, because it gets really gross until it gets towards the end, and then it ramps up.
And then you have Michael Mann, who directs a police procedural.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So he's kind of directing Heat and Miami Vice as a horror film.
I'd never seen the movie again, but you watch random stuff. I was looking for, because thrillers, good thrillers are fun.
Oh, they're great.
But there's not a lot of them. Like, so I watched, have you ever seen Jennifer 8?
I've never seen
that. And I'm like, I'll watch, I don't know anything about it. And it was really good, and it was interesting, because they bring in, oh my gosh, I can't think of his damn name. Darn it. Yeah, can't think of the actor's name, but they bring an actor in who's like a kooky actor, but like who's a kind of like a star halfway, three quarters of the way through the movie. And he becomes kind of a main part of the movie. Like, it goes from a mystery kind of police drama into a police procedural where, like, everybody thinks that it's, you know, the detective trying to track down, you know, the serial killer is the serial killer. And then it's like, it just keeps shifting tone. So it's very interesting. And it has a, you know, has a pretty cool cast. Lance Henderson was in it.
Yeah, I mean, I remember Lance in it a lot.
Uma Thurman's in it.
Yeah, I don't remember. Maybe I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I can't think of the actor's name. He was an actor that was big in the 90s, and you're kind of like, what the hell happened to him?
Gene Orich.
Anthony Faglia, maybe? Jennifer. I think Anthony Faglia. Right? Andy Garcia. Oh my God.
Oh.
Andy Garcia. Listen, John Malkovich. John Malkovich comes in late in the game. Kathy Baker's in it. Andy Garcia is a forensic detective, and he comes and he's coming to the small town. He's part of the big city, and he just like his first day on the job, they discover a body in this trash, like this garbage dump.
Okay.
And it's interesting because they had to shot at a garbage dump, and they're going through garbage, and I'm like, I can't imagine the fact that they had a Hollywood crew, Hollywood actors, all these people going through garbage.
Yeah.
Had to be set up, I don't know, because the first 20 minutes of the movie is there. So I don't know how long they had to shoot there. It's like, I just don't envy the people who had to work that out.
And even in the day, to get the camera to work the right way, sometimes has to be under still hot lights.
Oh, yeah, and it's still all night shoot. So, yeah, it would have been, oh,
gross. Oh, you're making garbage.
But, so, yeah, they find this, and he thinks it's the work of the serial killer.
Okay.
And he runs into, like, chasing down leads, he runs into Uma Thurman, who is a blind woman who teaches at this school. And Lance Henriksen is like, the friend of Andy Garcia, and blah, blah, blah. But it's John Malkovich comes in late in the day as an FBI investigator, and it's really interesting and well done.
Kathy Baker, who's been in tons of things. Yeah.
So, but again, like it's one of those, and it rides the line. It's funny because it's more interested in the police stuff. Like it's one of the rare thrillers about a serial killer that doesn't get into him. Really, because usually they fetishize like the murders, and it's like all about like how he does it, you know, and all the stuff, and it doesn't really get into him much at all. Like, they kind of reveal stuff of who it is and all that crap at the end, but they don't really go to any great depth of it, which is interesting. It was, they kept it about Andy Garcia and kind of this weird... So it was interesting, but...
So it was more like a place to see, you know, that thriller sort of deal.
Yeah. Where, and it's like a neighbor to horror, because thrillers are, but, like, it doesn't really get into it. So. But I digest. The point of this podcast is Glenn wanted to talk about one of his favorite subgenres, which this one also, and it connects, because End of the World movies. And End of the World movies, Amanda and I were talking, that's sci-fi, horror, drama, comedy.
Comedy,
yeah. Like, so, I mean, that really, I mean, this is a huge topic that we'll just kind of try to throw some darts at. Like, that's a tough one to like a tough nut to crack.
Yeah, now you figure, you know, this is one of those ones that we may be doing a podcast in like 9 more months called End of the World 2.
Yeah.
Because I don't see how we're going to be able to get to lots of things, because when I started over here, I kept thinking about it and like kept backing away, getting a bigger and wider picture. And you're right. That's exactly what I thought about, was like, there's all these really cool ones that are comedies, and
well, there's
all these
the
others.
End of the World.
Yeah.
Then you can go to Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
Then you can go to 2012.
Yeah.
Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
Like, so that's...
So you have sub-genres like zombies, right? Mm-hmm. Space invaders.
Yep.
All kinds of things.
The 2012, yeah, like those, it's weather, but like, yeah, those weather things play.
Yeah.
Knowing, that's another one, that's alien intervention, basically. Happening,
right.
Mother Nature, which, I mean, there's a lot of those. Frogs gets into the Mother Nature thing, too.
Yeah, surreal ones that you're not really sure what they're about. the fountain.
Oh, God.
Right? Yeah. And you're like, this is, I think, the end of the world, but yeah. I don't really know if it is or not.
It's as long as the end of the world?
Right.
Like, it's good, but it's that long.
Who was the other one he...
Was it Tom Hanks? Because that's Cloud Atlas. That's Wachowski.
Yeah, I guess that's
dystopia. That's not really the end of the world. Like, what?
Yeah, it's kind of heading towards that, though.
Because I forget, because it has, like, the weird...
Yeah.
Because it has the space stuff, and then it has the end of the time. I don't know.
But you have the... the one I was just thinking about while you're... While Fountain came up and thinking about surreal ones was the one that kind of follows the Bible.
Oh.
That was a big deal just a little while ago.
Yeah, about Moses.
No, I mean, it takes place in a house. And,
oh,
you know what I'm talking about?
Yes. Mother.
Oh, mother, yeah. Yeah. Or yes, the end of the world.
I call it Mother. that movie's a mother.
Yeah. It's one of those movies that you kind of almost hope that Danzig would allow the song in. Wouldn't that have been weird?
No.
Not at all.
Can I make the movie weirder? I don't know. I mean, shoot. So where would you like to start? Because, again, there's a table set.
It just goes all over, right? So one of the areas that I wanted to mention, again, you know, you can cut these up into, like, themes and all kinds of things. And one of the things that I thought an interesting place to start might be there's ideas of how the world ends, right? Whether it's invasion or a plague or whatever. So one topic is usually like let's just start with like the whole plague idea, right? So plague incorporates zombie films, incorporates just people disappearing, all those kind of things. Some of the ones I like to think about a lot when thinking about the whole plague one is 28 days and 28 weeks later. And the one that, and I mentioned this to you a little while ago, was that even though there's never a third one made, like 28 months later, I almost think that the girl with all the gifts is so close without intentionally trying to be the third one of that, that it if you watch all three of them together, it's really a fun watch.
Yeah. That is, I mean, it is one of those where, I mean, depending on what they did, I wish they would do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a story there, and I think, but it has to, here's the thing to me, is it has to have a resolution and not like a Walking Dead resolution.
right.
Where it just goes on forever. Because I just, to me, that's not interesting. It can be interesting.
It can be.
Because either, to me, if your decision is they can't defeat the illness, so you either have to have like a stalemate that says something where it's just like we can't.
Right.
Survival with some manner of hope of like, okay, we can beat this, but we can either outlast it or we can survive against it.
Right.
Or you just have to go all in and just have like the end. And like have like the end, kind of like no, you're dead. Just like humans lose. Mm.
Well, you know, and that's the thing with those three movies is that Girl, the ending was one of those endings that if I was in a theater, I would have stood up and applauded at the end of the movie. Because it was like this whole idea of like, well, the human race just has to give up as it is. It's different now. It's not that. It's not about survival. It's about this is what it is.
You know what it is? I didn't even think of it.
Remember the whole plant thing? She sets it on fire to create this whole new society.
It's essentially, if you think about it, it's a spiritual sequel to Last Man on Earth. Legend.
Yeah, definitely.
Like,
yeah.
Where it's like this is the next evolution, and humans are not part of that plan.
Right. Right.
And Planet of the Apes, too. Like, you know, that kind of was like, you know, your time. You had your time.
You had your time.
Yep, and it's
so good.
And it's funny, I just watched The Matrix today. And those are end-of-the-world movies.
Absolutely.
Like, and the Terminator movies. So essentially, you can get into, like, the popular kind of sci-fi.
Yeah, Planet of the Apes, Matrix.
Yeah, I just watched Matrix today because I figured, because the trilogy is online, or is on Prime, and I'm like, I didn't watch them in a minute, so I'll just watch them. So I watched the first one today.
Yeah.
And the only thing like that gets me is like the sound effects in it are the corny, it's like, and I get it. It's kung fu stuff. That's what they picked that up from kung fu movies. That's what they did, and it's to stimulate action and sound and speed. But it's just, it comes off so corny. Like,
yeah.
Like, oh, come on.
And special effects are, the social effects get weird too later on. You know, in two and stuff. They're strange, but that's what they had then. And I remember sitting in the theater and being like, this is the top of the social effects. You're not going to get any better than this.
Well, yeah,
and now you look back and you're like, ooh, that's...
But
some of the CGI is brutal.
But yeah, I mean, you got to give them credit, though. They went all in. And it's the fight with Smith, probably, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, at the time, like, even, I mean, it still didn't look amazing then, but it was like, that was their vision.
Right.
And, like, there are probably many ways they could have done it. And, like, it's not perfect, but it works. And, like, if you give into the movie and kind of go with it, I think the problem with Matrix movies is too many fans were like, they wanted just a, either they wanted the first movie or they wanted their version. Because when you went into the first movie, they're like, shit, he's Superman. He can do anything, Superman. And they didn't do it. They got more into the, like, the bigger picture of, like, okay, cool. You're free. Now you have to free the world. And what's the cost? And what does that look like? And it's
yeah.
And like you've said, it's more philosophical. It's like you can't just go and have a war and win. Like,
because
if you win that war, that may kill humanity. You have to come to a point where it's like both sides can win.
Yes.
Or like be content to lose together, kind of thing.
Right.
And it's people didn't want that. And it's funny because they're super. The other movies are even more action packed. When you think of like the car chase and like the big battle.
The big battle when they're drilling into Zion.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah.
It's like Star Wars huge.
I forgot until watching it. I'm like, oh shit, I forget. Like, cause you see the one scene of like that goes through the camera. I'm like, oh, I forgot about the architect.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, all these weird god characters that are in it.
Tons of them.
And it's interesting,
even down to the Hindu family in the subway. When you figure out what they represent, you're like, holy crap, these guys are so smart about all the world's religions. Throwing them all into this movie.
Matrix, it's very heavy-handed in retrespect, but like his boss, Anderson's boss, is like, you either have to stay here and you're going to do this work, or you got to go, and you're not, you can trust the system about stuff. And it's like, again, it's still heavy-handed now, but like when you first watch the movie, you don't get it. So like, oh, okay, whatever. But there's all these kind of like hints in like them setting the table like this. What he is, like,
it's going to be
more. Like, it's interesting because it's kind of like John Wick, where it's an action movie, but there's a weird fantasy, sci-fi kind of element to it, and they kind of get into it more in the second movie.
Yeah, and this is how I like to think about the John Wick thing, too. They built a mythology.
Yeah.
Right? They built a mythology around this idea of assassins.
Yep.
So here's the whole thing. Here's how it works. Here's some of the things in the background. Even to the point of, and I know we're getting off the topic, but even to the point of where how the call center looks.
I love that.
Right?
Yeah.
Isn't
and
that
like
crazy?
Yeah.
They've done all that.
Yeah. Which, I mean, and you figure that they thought it through. Like, why would they do it like this? Well, it's blah, blah, blah. It's zero. So
right.
Whatever. But, I think that's great. And the same thing, Matrix made a mythology. Like, the Terminator, that's why I love, like, for the Terminator movies, I like them. I like the first couple. And then I'm trying to think, the third one was okay-ish. But, like, they're never, first two of the ones you want to see. But, like, I love the future stuff. Like when in Terminator 2, when you see like it starts and you see the future stuff, that's what I'm all in. That was the movie I always wanted to see. It's like, oh my god, that's great. Because it's amazing. And like they made mythology. Like it's neat.
And the first one that takes place completely in the future is not terrible. It just wasn't good either. You know what I mean? It was mediocre, but it could have stopped way worse than that.
Yeah.
The one with Bale, right? Christian Bale.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah.
It's okay film.
Yeah.
It's much better than the third one.
I lose track of them.
The whole building of that mythology is important, especially for these end of the world movies where there's more than one. Planet of the Apes has that mythology, especially with the originals, where the time's a circle, but it doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
And I never noticed that it didn't have to be a circle. what you're doing is you're watching the one time loop, but you're not sure if it's, you know, loop like that again.
Yeah.
And they put hints in there that I never caught until I watched them all back to back. And went, oh, they're telling you that it won't necessarily happen like this again.
Sonny Vercoe does that.
Right.
Where he has, like, it's...
That's
like,
a good end of the world movie.
Yeah.
I never think about that.
Because literally, I mean, they kind of get into, like, and it's cool because they hint at everything is that, like, if he doesn't fix things...
Right.
It would be the end of the world because it's essentially a collapse of time. Like, because there's a crack in it and it'll start, you know, kind of closing in on itself. Like, just kind of almost nature. Like,
yeah,
it's
a quantum end of the world.
Yeah.
Where everything folds in on itself. Another one is, there's plenty of them that talk about how either our resources or our technology fails. Are we still okay? So technology fails or we run out of resources, and
which that's becoming all too real,
right?
Anyway,
it's a freaky one.
Yeah.
So like the ones that I think about are
the road,
Soylent Green,
yeah.
Right? And then there was there was another one that a lot of people haven't seen, but it's a really cool movie called, this just makes me think of old-time wrestling, but it's called The Ultimate Warrior. It was in the 70s. It's got Yul Brynner, who's hired, and it feels like a cowboy movie. He's hired to protect these people who have, like, kind of walled off a city, and they're growing food on the roofs.
Oh, okay.
And then there's other marauders trying to get the food. It does feel a lot like the Mad Max movie.
I was gonna say, yeah,
another
like,
end
yeah.
of the world thing, but that one's gasoline. He's hired to protect them, and it's an early Max von Sydow movie.
Oh,
so Max is in it, and he looks for us American people, he looks young. He's in his 40s.
Max
Von Sydow
is like a million years old.
Right, he's a million years old, literally. So, yeah, those type of ones are really cool.
It's interesting because if you, and it makes me think of it, I don't know if you heard of that, but like the Satanic Panic movies of the 70s and stuff, it starts getting into end of the world because the prophecy of the Antichrist, like with the Damien movies, it's the prophecy of the Antichrist. So you're getting towards, it's kind of leading, it'll take a minute till the end of the world, but like the conclusion is to have the, you know, the end times, you know,
right.
The apocalypse war.
I mean, Rosemary's Baby is the beginning chapter of the end of the world movie,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then, like you said, The Omen ends up with, I think, the third one being called The
Final
Conflict,
yeah.
Which is about the final conflict.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, like, that's a big part of, like, this panic movies is it's not, I mean, there's some that's just, like, they you know, it's the demon kind of fooling with somebody, but there's, when you get into the Satan one, it's the ultimate goal of, like, I'm gonna burn it all down.
right.
Like, shooey! Which is always, you know, interesting, like, I'm trying to think of, I mean, the one, and it's a terrible movie, the Arnold Schwarzenegger one, like that. Like where he's fighting the devil.
End of days.
Yeah.
And then with the one, so I watched one on my way over almost. That was an end of resources type one. It was very. It's more of a drama than a horror film, but the idea is horrific. So we run out of energy. Something in the grid breaks. So all of the electricity goes. And they show you how much we rely on power. So if electricity goes, what ends up going is it's harder to deliver gasoline, food, everything starts to kind of become harder and harder to deliver to remote places. And then in this movie, it's called Into the Woods. It was done by Ellen Page and Rachel Evan Woods.
Yeah, okay.
So they're two sisters, and they're living with their dad up in the woods, and this whole thing kind of happens. And then it's about their survival from that point on.
Okay.
It turns a little horrific here and there. And end of the world. And energy is one of those things that if we don't have it, a lot of the systems that we're used to break down.
Oh yeah, I mean like going back to the Road, a Book of Eli, somewhat.
Yeah.
As those kind of movies where, I mean, in the Walking Dead show, like where once the fragile kind of societal structure collapses, the parasitical people that feed off, you know, they're like the only way they would survive is to feed off of everyone else. They don't want to work together. They want to which is always funny because it's kind of, it's the notion of like, you're literally cutting your nose off to spite your face. It's like, without one another, the society can't be rebuilt. We can't, on a grand scale, survive because you're a lone wolf. Someone will get you. Someone else will come along because they will work with someone else and they'll kill you. Like, it's one of those things where, like, you're kind of doomed.
Yeah, and The Road is that. I mean, The Road, when I watched The Road, it really was one of the most scary movies I'd ever seen.
Oh, yeah. And
I was so freaked out.
It's grueling.
Yeah. And it almost, like, never lets up.
Yeah.
You know how me and you, we've mentioned this on the show a lot, is, The Woman in Black?
Yeah.
So, like, it hits the point, and then it doesn't really back off.
Yeah.
And you start to feel, like, this anxiety, because there's no breathing point anymore. There's no point to, like, just to relax.
Yeah.
And, The Road's great, but, for someone to be like, hey, you want to have some fun and go watch The Road? You're kind of like, I'm not quite sure if I'm up for that.
And I mean, you know, and again, like, you get into the zombie stuff, like, Walking Dead does a great job, and Day of the Dead did.
Right.
Of, like, just, because they're slow zombies, but, like, just the sheer numbers, and the fact is that, like, you will run out of energy, like, running and fighting and stuff. You have to avoid them. And, like, even Dawn of the Dead got into it, like, where, like, marauders, like, where it's bad enough you have to kind of worry about them as you have to worry about people. And then you have to, you literally either, you're kind of going for supplies to a new habitat.
Right, right.
Or, like, you know, like transferring messages or something, you know, basically there's little reason to kind of be out on the road except for those.
Right. And unless you have, like, a lot of charisma and are clever, you can't rebuild that society. So you're mentioning of, like, The Road and everybody coming kind of, like, almost individualistic and I'm just going to kill you for myself to survive.
Yeah.
There's very few things. And, you know, in The Walking Dead, you have Negan,
yeah,
who, out of charisma and being clever, figures out how to rebuild something.
Well, same with the governor.
Right. And
the governor is pure charisma.
But when you think about it, so is, I can't think of the character's name, but basically Tina Turner the third Mad Max film.
I mean, it's just that...
Right? She's figured it out. And when other people challenge her, you see that there's not much there that really holds that person in that spot.
Well, it's the idea, and I mean... I use the term just because that's what the term, but like this, the idea of the strong man.
Yeah.
I mean, in her term, you know, the strong woman. But like the alpha person that like takes control and is like have a plan.
Right.
Because that's what the people don't have. Is like they have guns, they have this, they have a plan.
Right.
And it's someone that has the plan that's like, yes, like no, if we use the guns, like not just to kill, but like to do this, and we do this, and we do them move forward, and like Negan right. has a plan. Like it's
yeah,
not,
absolutely.
Not a humanitarian plan.
No.
It's a, and it is a very parasitical plan because you know he will take a cut of everyone's stuff and but that's you know that's his plan.
But it almost looks like with those characters, they thought the whole thing out and are very good at convincing everybody else that this is the right plan.
Yeah.
Whereas Rick, his plans are just go to some place that seems safe, survive. Go to a nice place that seems safe. Survive. It's not really a plan.
Well, I think
like a Negan plan or a Tina Turner plan.
I think with Rick, it is he's very reluctant to be the alpha.
Like, that's true.
Because I think he was initially, you know, when like as a, I think he's a sheriff or something.
Right.
But he doesn't want to be. But everyone expects him to be. And every time in Walking Dead, he ever kind of did that.
is you have to make decisions that are cutthroat.
Right.
And it's hard to start a, like, it's hard to start a new society. And they get into it at one point with the one, oh God, one town they have, they kind of move into, and I can't think of the name of it, Alexandria. Where it's like, you can't start fresh if you have someone leading you that has blood on their hands, kind of. But you need that person to make, to safeguard you so you can start that new life.
Right.
And it's a hard line to walk. And, you know, I, with Rick, I don't know, I think he wants to be a part of the side. He doesn't want to be the strong man and kind of like have all this blood on his hands and all of this guilt, but somebody has to take it, and unfortunately it ends up with him.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is all those really big topics to start getting into it.
Yeah, oh yeah, I mean, again, like, you get into, like, the aliens and stuff, because, like, it's, you run into, you know, Independence Day, or any of those, like, War of the Worlds.
I mean, thinking about the Space Invaders ones, when you think about it, even, and I know how excited most people are, but I, you know, knowing that I read comics more than watch them, but even the Avengers storyline that's going on now is technically an end of the world.
Yeah,
well,
no, it is.
With Thanos?
Yeah.
That's an end of the world story, again.
Yeah, and I mean, it's one of the things where, much like the fear of kind of the zombies and stuff, is like you lose control, like with an alien invasion.
Yeah, yeah.
So far afield from what we've dealt with, we don't know how we would deal with. Like, we only have, like, to our knowledge, the most powerful weapons we have on Earth, again, to our knowledge, are nuclear weapons. You know, nuclear
right,
weapons.
Right.
If they can work around nuclear weapons or make them, you know, unusable, like,
yeah,
we don't know that we can beat them. Like,
right.
if and the idea is, and I don't know if it's just talking, but, like, if you look at human history, we go as invaders. Like,
right,
when we're conquerors. We don't go to new lands to be like, hey, let's be buddies. We go to conquer.
Right.
Because it's easier to rule someone and have them do what you want, so you get what you want, and they'll learn to kind of live with your rule, than it is to go and be ruled over.
Be ruled over. Which brings me to one of the ones I needed to mention in this podcast, is this same idea, The World's End.
Yeah.
With Simon Pegg.
Yep.
You know, they're here to make us part of them.
Mm-hmm.
And what a cool movie that one. That's such a fun movie.
Oh yeah, and it's funny because that, and then there was like, and there was World End, and then End of the World, like the other comedy one that was kind of came out near it with Seth Rogen in them. But that's more of a demons and stuff. But yeah, like both show that like it's still really funny.
Right.
In a gallows kind of way.
Yeah.
But yeah, World's End is similar to, I mean, one of the big ones, Body Snatchers.
Oh, yeah.
Which is truly worst-case scenario because they, you know, humans need to rest. We need to sleep. We have no choice.
Right.
And when we sleep, they supplant us. Plant. But they take us. Like, they absorb us and become us. So that we still exist, but, like, we're controlled by another, like our intelligence and our kind of mind exists, but without the soul.
Right. So I, you know, that was those are based on the Jack Finney book, which then makes me think of when I think of Jack Finney, I also think of Douglas Wyndham, because they're at the same time they're writing stuff. So then you can get into things
Trippets.
Like Village of the Damned and Trippets.
Trippets.
Both amazing End of the World stories.
Yeah.
And I know how much you love Trippets.
Village of the Damned, and it's like it doesn't quite become, but it's the road to the end of the world, because if the children survive and they like they want to dominate mankind. But yeah, Trippets is great because the book is so much like 28 Days.
Right.
Because it's so multifaceted, it's like the Negroids blind everybody that watched them.
Right.
So you have most of the world blind.
Yeah.
And then
in the meteorites were an alien plant species
that
is carnivorous.
Yeah.
And that can uproot itself and starts kind of eating humans. So you have blind humans that can't necessarily, like, fight them. And then you have the triffids. And then you have the marauders.
Right.
Who are out there. And so it's, I mean, impossible to survive. Like, it's just
too much going on.
Yeah.
So, and that takes you to things like H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
Great Invasion.
Oh, yeah.
Story, which supposedly, I probably you've seen the pictures of the BBC version coming out.
Oh, no, I haven't seen pictures.
Huge.
Really?
I can see why. The BBC is making one and is spending like Star Wars money on this thing.
I mean, when you think of it though, like that's where you could get, when you think of all the great British actors,
yeah,
you know that they would be chomping the bit just to be bit players in that, because that was a huge. Like that's a huge book.
Absolutely.
As far as like sci-fi books. Like that's, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the two movies have been great. Like there's Spielberg did it, and then there's the old 50s one, which is another great touchstone kind of like.
Dirk Hell.
Yeah. Alien Invasion movie.
Yeah.
Which that was in the 50s, right with those. So absolutely.
And then, you know, Wells talks about the end of the world in multiple ways. You know, you have War of the Worlds, but he also tells us we could fuck ourselves in Food of the Gods.
Oh gosh, yeah.
You know, we mistreat nature by doing preservatives and steroids and all kinds of stuff.
And we refuse to adapt.
We make them adapt.
Yeah, when the giant, basically Food of the Gods, the idea is they're full of food and it starts making animals larger and then people. And so the book, kind of, which the movie never got into, like that I know of, there's this kind of sub-race of giants.
Right.
They have to exist alongside the humans, and the humans, the average-sized humans have zero interest. They're like, they're going to come and fight, you know, try to take us over and dominate us. We need to war with them. And so the book kind of ends with them, like, the giants deciding that they're going to have to go to war.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, the humans won't adapt and figure it out. He also gets into it in the time machine.
I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not going into a factory to be a slave to make giant pants. So this can take forever to make that.
Giant rooms. Giant repositories.
Yeah.
Giant toilet paper.
And I don't want to see pants with giants running around the planet.
It's going to be Watchmen all over again.
I already don't feel so great about my junk. I don't want to see somebody with bigger junk than me.
It's going to be Forbidden Planet. big scary wieners flopping around. But the time machine.
Yeah,
gets into it because he goes so far in the future that it's like society has destroyed itself.
Right. Yeah, the Morlocks.
Yeah.
Who are, you know, us going back to the most basic versions of ourselves.
Yeah.
Probably through the process of the movie The Road.
Yeah.
Just probably what we end up as.
Well, I mean, all that stuff hinges on the lack of resources, the change in food, the change in, you know, like diet and everything else, like, so, oh yeah, like, it's like, if it went bad enough, and humans, like, started to revert back to cannibalism and everything, we would evolve quickly.
we would. Definitely. So, one of the other ones I saw recently was called The Young Ones. And, super cool movie. Michael Shannon?
Okay, yeah.
He's in it. And Nicholas Holt?
I know the name.
The kid from, I think he's Beast now.
Oh, okay.
X-Men movies, but he's really well known for that one zombie movie that was kind of based on Romeo and Juliet and
a
bunch of other things like that.
Okay, I think I vaguely know.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's in it, and then Elle Fanning's in it, and then the one cast member that I was really shocked to see in this End of the World movie was the little kid from The Road and Let Me In is now like a 19-year-old. So I'm watching him in this movie and he's kind of like a young adult, but this kid grew up, he's like Nicholas Holt's height, but he still looks like he's got the same weight when he was in Let Me In. He's the thinnest, tallest kid I've ever seen in my life.
That's funny.
It's so weird, but it's a great end of the world movie. And it's basically based on the idea that our water resources start to go.
Oh, okay.
And very Shakespearean. Like this whole idea of like you're watching the characters do things that you know are going to turn out super bad, but they can't see it. You know, when you're watching a Shakespeare tragedy happen, you're watching characters do things that are natural to them, but you're like, oh, that's going to be bad. Don't do that. But there's no way that character's going to see how bad it's going to turn out.
Well, Michael Shannon's in a movie similar where he is having visions.
Yes, I saw that.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
And I can't say the damn name. But yeah, he's having visions of the end, you know, basically the end of the world. This is like cataclysmic event. And so the whole movie, you're just not sure if it's real or not. Like, because you don't know.
And he's got like a... The other character's like a son or a daughter?
I think he's got a family.
They don't know
whether to believe him or not.
Right.
And the town refuses because he's like, you know, kind of comes off as the Chicken Little.
Yeah. Here's another one called Bug. That's kind of the end of the world where it's only in his town.
Oh, okay.
Where he thinks things are.
Two movies that are kind of. No, they're connected in thematically. In the Mouth of Madness and the Mist.
Oh,
the notion of it's not. It's mankind kind of fooling with things he shouldn't,
right?
And kind of, you know, inviting in things that we can't deal with. And again, it's they're alien, but they're not aliens. They're something ultra-dimensional.
Right.
Like in the Mouth of Madness, it's the Lovecraftian creatures that kind of exist kind of with just beyond our sight. And in the Mist, it's like a parallel dimension that we crack a hole in, and they just, these kind of creatures, these bugs, like start sneaking in, and we don't know what to do. So that's, you know, interesting as those kind of movies, because, again, like the Mist, you see some of it in the Mouth of Madness at the end, in the beginning, like you kind of, like, she tries to give you the scope, but like the Mist really does a good job of like, this is the end, like, we don't know how, it's like, we don't know how wide this is spread, but this is real bad. Like,
right. And part of that, a good end of the world movie that I think the Mist taps into is the idea that certain characters truly understand it at the end.
Yeah.
In the Mist, the boy truly, without giving away, truly understands it's the end.
Yeah. Another great one, which, I mean, honestly, when you think like The Road does a great job of showing like the end. Oof. 12 Monkeys.
12 Monkeys is a good one. I didn't think of that.
Yeah, but like where it's like the end of time, and it's, I'm cheating, I'm with the way.
where it's
the end of days, and, you know, you see Bruce Willis going through kind of cities that are, that connects to I Am Legend, and so like Last Man on Earth and stuff, those kind of movies where it's a scope kind of thing. Where it's someone trying to face down the fact that, you know, humanity is lost. It's not even just losing, they have lost. And now it's just a matter of trying to survive to see if mankind can come back.
Right. You also have ones where end of the world movies where government fails. So the ones that that I would think about with that is we mostly know the book more than the movie, but 1984.
Yeah.
Especially the John Hurt version.
Yeah.
And Fahrenheit 451.
Yeah.
So end of the world movies where government's failing. You know it's going to keep getting worse and worse and worse. And I think one of the, even the best ones,
Dr. Strangelove would be on that one too.
Yeah. And Children of Men.
That's on the list, yeah.
Children of Men's a great, end of the world movie. And with, you know, the Mad Max ones, I always think about Doomsday as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Neil Marshall's film.
Absolutely.
Super cool movie, End of the World.
Which is funny because it mixes Mad Max with, like Arthurian kind of weird stuff.
And it's very Escape from New York when you think about it.
Yeah.
The girl is basically St. Quisco.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Like, you said, I've been meaning to kind of revisit it because that's a great little movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a long time ago they can do in the new Hellboys. But I really like Neil Marshall. I just do not like
what they're doing with Hellboy. It bugs me out. I just listened to a podcast with Warren Marshall, and some of my movie's ideas, like he had for stuff that didn't get off the ground, would have loved. So.
Really? Yeah. So. Well, he ended up getting hired to do a lot of, because people normally were looking at who's directing episodes of things, but he did direct a lot of the episodes for Game of Thrones that had war scenes in them.
Yeah.
He did a lot of those and did a great job. So always been a huge fan of Neil Marshall's.
Oh yeah. I mean it's absolutely.
And you know, in a way, you know, End of the World movies can start small. They can start in colloquial areas, right? And you know that it spreads from there. And I think in a way Silent Hill's kind of an End of the World movie. In a roundabout way.
Yeah,
you kind of get the idea that it's not just going to be here.
Yeah,
it's going to be further than here.
Well, you look at movies like The Day After Tomorrow, which you have these movies, which are big disaster kind of like, and they're silly in their way, but like, they're always about, like, government refusing to listen to science.
Yeah.
And like, there's, you know, a bunch of next tomorrow, 2012. Like, and again, there's way more than that, but,
and with the
least impact,
mention those.
Like, those movies where it's like, we wait until the last second to kind of do something, and it's like, too little too late, man. Like,
Kind
of screwed.
A lot of those meteor movies are,
Deep Impact, man,
into the world movie.
Because I'd never seen it when, because that came out when Armageddon did, and I watched Armageddon, and it was like, rah, hooray!
Yeah.
That's right, you see. Deep Impact. Oh boy, that is interesting. The new Godzilla movie is like an End of the World movie.
Yeah,
because essentially they
some kaiju movies are End of the World movies.
Yeah.
Pacific Rim as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if you don't have those robots to fight those, it is the end of the world,
mm-hmm.
as we know.
Yeah, and I mean with Godzilla, you know, it's setting loose all of these kind of titans.
Yep.
That. Once reigned over Earth, and now that they're all kind of pitted against one another for dominance, like mankind is a collateral damage. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah, and it's weird because when you watch some kaiju movies, they don't feel like End of the World movies. Other ones, specifically when you're watching it, you realize that these are about the end of the world.
Yeah.
So it just would depend on the movie itself. Like, you know, whenever I watch Godzilla vs. Megalon, I never really thought this is the end of the world.
It's just
Godzilla vs. Megalon.
Yeah, it's the end of Japan.
Yeah. Bye, Japan.
Nice one. You had a good run. These are great stuff. You're fun.
Time's up.
It is interesting because there is so much.
Yeah.
So much that you can kind of, you know,
go on and on about it. Yeah, disaster movies is another whole subgenre of.
Like you said, there really are so many different types. It's kind of hard. Because, again, like any of the zombie movies, they're usually global. They're not like a localized.
Yeah.
Like 20 Days is kind of quote unquote localized, but it's. You find out how it's not as localized as you think. And it's one of those where it's like. And shit, look at Measles today.
Right.
Where. Used to be stamped out, and now some idiots are just like not vaccinating their kids. So suddenly we're having outbreaks all over the fucking country.
Yeah.
Like, and it's just like, oops.
With that, there was, there's a really, really, really good one. So this one is one of those ones that, I highly recommend. It leans heavy on drama rather than horror, technically. There's a movie called I Think We're Alone Now. And it's starring Elle Fanning, and the main star is Peter Dinklage.
I was saying, like, I remember you were kind of interested in it.
Yeah. And it's super good. And it's just one of those movies where, like, basically there's not a lot of explanation, but a big chunk of the population has died off.
Huh.
You know, here's what the world would be like if 97% of everybody just fell off by then. This is what it would be like. It's just crazy. And, you know, it's an amazing movie. But not to just go off on another subject, but basically I think this is like one of those genres that we're talking about right now, because we kind of feel like we're stuck in this mode of seeing the end.
Oh yeah, I mean,
you wonder if like every generation had this feeling. You know what I mean? Like our parents might have had these moments when they were in their 30s and 40s as well.
I think it's different though, because I think once upon a time it was probably more biblical and more like, oh, sure, God is going to strike us down. And I think the more we have mastered, quote unquote, mastered technology and become slaves to it, we're realizing, and that right now we're realizing that like there are, you know, madmen in the world who have the ability to wipe out like continents and essentially the whole world. And there's not just that. There's so many ways. There's that. There's the threat of. And now we realize, like, oh shit, an asteroid could hit the Earth, like, you know, like the dinosaurs. Or we could, like, we're so far along in climate, like, disaster. And when you have a president that's like, that's fake news, I don't believe in it. And it's like, the people that can help to change things refuse to because it behooves them. And you're like, dude, you're at the end of your life. You don't care. Like, you have to think, like, generationally, like, 10 generations from now, will they have a planet? And so many people are just like, drug life. Like, I'm going to have $1 million. That's what I care about. Like, and it's just, it's crazy. So there's, I think we all kind of feel that way. Like, crap, my last job I had, I always felt like I was going to be fired, and stuff was fired. Like, so it's one of those where we're always worried, like, oh, yeah, this is the end of the world. And there will come a day when it really comes. Like, it didn't mean that this to me is just part of the deal. Like, man will rise and fall. Like, something else will come. But it's scary. It's definitely scary because we don't hold our fate in our hands necessarily.
Yeah, and I think we see that now more than ever, because one of the things we used to rely on was the idea that our countries, or our friends' countries at least, had leaders that felt like, to some degree, benevolent parents. Even if you didn't agree with them, you trusted that they were there to take care of you.
Yeah. Well,
and I don't think that exists as well as it did in the past. And you can definitely see it with, you know, other countries, and our own. even ones who seem like they know what they're doing, Theresa May.
Yeah.
Clearly has no fucking clue what's going on, and has no idea how to fix Brexit. And Brexit's literally one of those weird little dominoes that, I'm not saying it's the end of the world, but what happens to England will affect the whole world. Maybe in a minor way, but it will affect the whole world.
Well, look at Venezuela, as of last week, they had massive power outages, and like it was causing looting and rioting, and like I saw a quote with where a guy was like, literally, like, it's gonna, like, there's a day gonna come where we will have to eat one another.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was that bad.
Into the woods.
Yeah,
it's like about the loss of power.
Yeah, and it's so fragile, and you have like, and no one's really saying what's happening. They're like, oh, it's part of the grid. Well, why don't you fix it? We'll talk about it later.
right.
But you have, like, someone in power that's declared themselves the president, and then someone saying they should be, so you have two sides that are in opposition, so, you know, and that's Venezuela, and it's thrown them into this, like, Armageddon, like, right now. So it's a scary proposal.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and it's always kind of, it's healthy to kind of think about. It's just, you got to be careful. Let's flow on it.
Cause right.
It's a super depressing topic. It's just like,
yeah. And again, you know, those government end of the world movies, creepy as shit.
Yeah.
Because you kind of, well, as well as the loss of resources, those are things that you kind of feel like we're living through. We don't necessarily always feel like we're living through an alien invasion.
Dead Zone.
Although,
Dead Zone, is coming true.
I wish it right over your shoulder at Dead Zone.
Like, it's coming true, where it's just like it's someone in power who. It becomes more about the ego and the, you know.
Right.
And I mean, you know, we have lost from, you know, as horrific as Nagasaki and Hiroshima were, they at least served as a horrible lesson to mankind of, like, this is what horrors.
Yeah.
This weapon can bring. And people have forgotten that.
like the Earth. I mean, shoot, look at how cavalierly people like embrace Nazism lately.
Oh God, yeah,
and
yeah.
Without understanding what it is, I mean, you just forget. I mean, we're getting towards 100 years. Well, it's been 100 years since World War One, so we're getting near to 100 years since it's been World War Two. So
right, right.
We've forgotten.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's definitely crazy, but happily. The plan for the next podcast, when we get the whole gang together, is talk about kaijus.
Oh, yeah.
Which is end of the world-ish, but, like, more fun.
Yeah.
It's more big monsters beating each other up.
Yeah.
More wrestling.
Well, yeah, I think that this was fun. Hopefully the viewers, or listeners. Do we have viewers? Do we have listeners?
I mean, I hope it's listeners, because if we have viewers, then there's cameras in this room that I don't know about.
We got to put our pants on, then. We shouldn't be doing pants.
Leave them off.
All right.
I don't know.
Maybe you should go off.
I mean,
they can't go back. They can't go any further down.
Yes, it can't get worse. any last thoughts on the end of the world? Are you speaking of friends for the end of the world?
Yeah. You know, that was another comedy that actually just ran through my head when on my way here. It was one of those, but he made a really cool one that I can't think of the name of. Did you ever see this one with David Cross? Where these people go to like a dinner party with their friends and they're all like 30 somethings and then like all the sirens go off signaling that something's wrong outside and there's like it just turns into this hilarious thing.
Okay, I've seen something like that.
Everybody's mad at each other during the end of the world and they can't get out of the house.
Oh, see, I've seen something.
The chemical spill.
God, they have a movie right next door. It was an end of the world movie, if you remember.
Oh, that one was messed up.
Yeah. I saw one that was kind of end of the world-y. And it's similar to, like, it's a bunch of people that go to a dinner party, and something happens where an imposter of one of them appears.
Oh, wow.
And so it's like multiple timelines kind of converging, and it's very end of the world-y, and it's very creepy. It's really good, though. But very disturbing.
Wow. There's one more. So I want to talk about, before we shut off, the very first nuclear end of the world movie, I think, that ever existed. There was this movie called,
one of the ones you and Jack are always talking about?
It is called, The Something, the Flesh, and the Devil.
Oh, I've never heard of it.
So this movie is so cool. It was made in the 1960s, so it was during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And it's about a guy being underground working. He's a sewer worker. And something knocks him out, and he wakes up, and he comes out of the sewer. This is an old black and white movie. It's so early on in this idea. He comes out of the sewer and everybody's gone.
Weird.
And it's the guy in the sewer is Harry Belafonte.
Hilarious.
And he's the last guy on planet Earth. He's walking around trying to figure out. In the 1960s, they made this film.
I mean, at least they could kind of dance around, though, and be kind of happy.
Exactly.
Happy about the end of the movie.
But no, it's a super cool movie. So if you ever get a chance, check it out, even though I only gave you
I mean, it's had three Belafonte's in it.
And it's Something, the Flesh, and the Devil. I can't remember what the first is.
Here, I'll look it up real quick. What's a funny one? Remember, I have that religious, like, short, and that one where Jesus is stalking that guy. That's essentially an end of the world one.
That one's hilarious. Those educational films are great, though. Because those educational films had ones like Duck and Cover.
The World of Flesh and the Devil.
There you go.
1959.
Wow. I mean, come on. That's pretty early for an end of the world movie.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Those weird educational ones. Yeah, Duck and Cover and all that.
Duck and Cover is literally
a real and crazy
educational end of the world movie.
We could have like a whole episode of educational horror movies. Amazon at one point had all of those. I've never seen, you always hear about Blood on the Highway. That's not what we, like, the movie we watched when I was in driver's training was fucking Don Johnson and, like, about safety and stuff, and it was not. And, like, yeah, so I was like, oh, what's Blood on the Highway? I couldn't even watch all of those. Like, I started watching, they're
fucked up. Like, one of the first ones in the 50s. And it's like, yeah, that's a dead body. That's a dead body burned alive. Like, burned alive. That's a body all covered in gore. And, like, it's just, they're fucked up. And they, like, went into, like, the like 50s. 50s or 60s, and then, like, the 70s and then 80s, I think. They did three of them.
Right.
Like, oh, no. Like, I'm good.
Now, even the ones, those educational films about how to be a good patriot, those are freaky as hell, too. And you think that they wouldn't be, but there's one, I mean, this is another one, shot in black and white. It's so old, and it's talking about what makes a good American, and it's showing farmers working on a farm with a tractor, and it says, The guy, the narrator, literally says the words, because we were smart enough to build mechanical machines to work on land and be able to have it, that's why we deserve it more than the natives who were here before us.
Oh.
And you're like, what the hell? And they literally show people in, like, native garbs digging with clams while the other guy's got a tractor and he goes,
drives over them.
Drives by, and you're like, oh my god, I can't believe this thing. But yeah, educational films are scary as heck.
All right, cool.
Got off the subject.
No, that's all in the world. Right now, everything's in the world. Cool. Thank you for tuning in. I am Chris. That is Glenn. We will hopefully be back soon. We apologize for the pauses in our. I think it's only the third show we've done this year or something. Like, so we just, it's hard getting the band together. So we're doing our best.
We'll hit triple digits at some point.
Someday. I don't know if it'll be this year.
We're so down the line.
I think this is episode 81. So we've got to really speed up.
Yeah.
Cool. Everyone stay weird. Spooky and scary, whatever the cool. Because everything like that's been taken. So stay potato. That's our new catchphrase. Hey, potato!
Hey, potato!